And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba. We continue our season previews, all 30 teams across Major League Baseball, to get you ready for the fantasy baseball season upon us. We're into February, and draft season is ramping up in a big, big way. And why not get to the AL East, or NL East, to the Miami Marlins? And of all people to join me to talk Miami Marlins baseball, good friend of mine, good friend of the show, co-partner, founder, owner, however you want to say it, of Gaining the Edge Fantasy with myself, Michael Simeone, and Jorge Montanez. You can find him also at The Athletic, at Fantasy Pros, and the man behind the Bases Loaded podcast. He's on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. Mike Curlin, how you doing, my friend?
I'm so much better now that I'm here with you, Bubba. Is that what you want to hear?
It sounded so honest and sincere.
And then I opened my mouth and actually realized, oh, it's not. It's sarcasm. It's Curlin. Yes.
Yeah, we're talking Marlins baseball. Yeah, Curlin's been very pumped about this for a while.
This is like, it's cool. Okay, cool. I'm a fan of the Marlins. I get it. It hurts to be one, but I am. And then I realized we had this discussion, like, who else is there in the fantasy circles that really are a fan of the Marlins? And I realized kind of alone, kind of on this island, and nobody's really rushing over here to save me or be a part of it. So here I am on, probably, I think I have two more Marlins previews coming up. Shocker,
You're the man. You're the man for the job. It's a beautiful thing.
The bar isn't set very high, and it's not, Like, it's just one guy. Like,
hey, sometimes it's all it takes. Yeah. Just one guy. So it'll be fun. It'll be fun.
It'll be fun. Yeah, there is a lot to it. I tend to undersell myself a lot, which I shouldn't do, but yes, I tend to do. But I also undersell the fantasy interest here in the Marlins, because at least we're not the Pirates.
Yes, the Pirates. I recorded the Oakland Athletics before this. Oof. And you want to talk about tough for fantasy? That might be the worst show. And Carlos Marcano was a great man and joined me on that show, and we kind of had a therapy session for 45 minutes. So it was good stuff. So we'll talk Marlins, but before we do so, I mentioned where your work is at. Let people know what you got going on.
Okay, so we're ramping up. Obviously, behind the scenes, we're ramping up for a very busy draft season. We've already been pumping stuff out. I'm slacking on getting those pitcher ranks out, but they're coming out for the Patreon. We're getting our top 50s out tomorrow, and then top 100 probably by early to mid next week. So we got that going on. We have Fantasy Pros. I just started writing there. So dropped a spring training, like what I watch out for in a typical spring training, because the World Baseball Classic isn't typical. And you know what else isn't typical? The last few years of spring training. So with all that said, though, I'm actually coming up with, and you guys are helping me behind the scenes figure out how I can still bring a unique spin to spring training this year. So that's a whole nother discussion, but that's a whole nother game plan going on behind the scenes. The Athletic, you mentioned, I got stuff there coming out soon, 40 man stuff, where I actually have a list of a lot of names of every single team's obscure names of just most likely AL, NL only type of formats. This will really benefit, and maybe some DCs if you're into draft and hold formats. It's going to be basically going through every single team's 40 man and just picking out some really obscure names that could just find ways in the playing time via injury or performance in the minors, or just maybe have a big spring training with an added look this year. So that's the type of thing I'm kind of focusing on right now, kind of really honing in on the deeper league stuff. And the YouTube, obviously, is actually, I have a video I'm recording tomorrow. Yeah, there it is. I know. The one thing that it's also a Gaining the Edge product. It is youtube.com/@GTE Fantasy, which is something you'll find from pretty much everything I do. Patreon.com/GTE Fantasy. And so that's like the big two things right now is the Patreon and the YouTube. And then, of course, The Athletic and Fantasy Pros for written content on top of all that. So,
Curlin's busy. Curlin's busy.
I do this kind of stuff every year, man.
I know. That's not how the season started. And we all said it was going to happen. And you said, no, it wouldn't. And here we are. So, it's because it's the way your brain works. And we're not going to go on a whole podcast about this, but we love that.
It's concentrated on certain niches. I'm holding true to the niche work. I really am.
Just trying to fine tune it, because the WBC, I didn't realize it until you spilled it out to us like yesterday or today or whatever.
I think it was today.
It really opened my eyes, like, oh yeah, that's gonna make lineup tracking really tricky when half the main players aren't even going to be around.
Like, I get one strong week of, and I would think that the teams are going to utilize their players normally for that week just to get them a ramped up for the WBC so they don't go in getting injured, probably, you know, more likely. But also they want to see what they have and tinker with their own stuff. And not a lot of teams really slow play their spring training stuff. And then of course, as teams fall in and out or fall out of the contention, you'll have players return to the lineup. So some teams will get some more run than others in terms of looks. So it's going to be an ongoing process of just balancing all this stuff all year, all off season, all spring training, I should say. But there are some teams that are largely unaffected. So there are still going to be some teams worth watching. It's just going to be a matter of, I actually had Jordan from our chat. He emailed me. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but he went through every single roster for me and picked out every major league player on a WBC roster, and not even the official rosters, the unofficial rosters,
40 or 50 man rosters,
the 50 man rosters right now. So, as people drop out, he's like, "Yeah, I'm just going to drop the news in our," which he's like, you know, that's his thing.
WBC king. It's impressive.
So I want to give him, you know, his props. Like he did a lot of legwork. I shared him my little list, and I don't even think he looked at my little list I had going, because I spent about an hour or so today collecting names. So, and he just went above and beyond. So I'm looking forward to taking that, because what I'm going to do is take that, and then that's going to leave myself to tracking, which I'll share with the Patreon. I'm going to be tracking who's in and out of lineups and who re-enters, and as they re-enter, how it shifts the lineup around. And so it's going to still be a very unique niche product. And there is a lot of carryover, at least to the early part of the season, a lot of the time. So I am a little frustrated that we don't get quite that sample again in spring training. But I think it's still going to be something worth tracking, just for the fact that maybe we do get an extra name or two versus maybe the larger handful we get entering the year in a given season. So ultimately, I will find a way to still do something unique with it. It's just going to be challenging and something I need to keep up with daily, more so than usual, probably, which is just bring it at this point. Bring it on, man.
That's what Kirby lives for. That's what he lives for, folks. Don't let him tell you otherwise.
Challenge. The challenge is always fun, man.
I think when we start here with the Marlins, one thing we can both agree on is, as rough as things can be, there's one guy that we both love a lot. Mm-hmm. And he's on the cover of MLB The Show 2023, and he's swagged out. And if he could ever just stay healthy, God, he'd be amazing. And I'm talking about the one, the only, Jazz Chisholm, ADP of around 47 over the last couple of weeks, according to DC's. Like, he's always like 14 homers, 12 steals at 254 in 60 games. That's some pretty serious pacing if you want to play that game. But the talent's legit. It's just stay healthy. And now he might play center field, it sounds like. He's going to play center field. So how are you looking at Jazz and drafts? Because I love Jazz. I know you love Jazz. It's just there's a lot of risk involved with Jazz. We're not even talking about the smooth sounds of Jazz. We're talking about Jazz Chisholm.
Yeah, and honestly, I go back and forth here with Jazz in terms of how I feel about him playing center field, because, and I'm sure you've been watching this game for a long time, playing fantasy and being an analyst for a long time. You've seen players learning new positions be a huge issue for them offensively. However, that's usually when a player is being forced to learn a new position. Jazz, from the article I was reading from The Athletic a week ago or so after, you know, the news broke that he was going to be playing center field, he put it out there that he would want to do it and be willing to, and he wants to be, quote, it was like almost word for word, quote, like the best center fielder in baseball, because that's just the type of attitude, mindset, and just what he expects from himself, which I love that type of attitude from a young player, and Jazz brings that to the table. So I love the work ethic. He's already putting in the work for it and wants it. So that kind of changes my full-on like outlook of being completely negative, but then, okay, fine. It's not a negative outlook. He wants to learn this position. He's going out of his way to, and he's going to, plus the talent behind the plate in terms of, not, I shouldn't say behind the plate like he's a catcher, but, you know, the talent from that side of the ball. I think that'll already kind of just play up to what it is. I'm not too worried about that regressing in a negative manner because of this as much, but it's just one of those things that how healthy can he stay in center field? It's a more demanding, physically demanding position that requires him to be more athletic than second base, requires him to exercise those legs that tend to get hurt. Groins are more prone to injury out there, you know, hamstrings, et cetera, calves, walls, you know, Eloy, please. Speaking of another guy I love. So it's one of those things where he has to learn all this now, and wanting to is great. And also, again, that takes away that mental strain of maybe not, you know, the average player learning a new position might not want to, but now he's adding in the physical, the potential for physical injury. And that's where it's like the give and take. I don't know what to do here. I'm in a draft right now and had Randy Rosarena not been there in the third for me, I think Jazz still would have been one of my top choices. So it hasn't scared me off yet, but it's one of those things that if I take Jazz early in the third, fourth, in the third round, I should say, cause that's where he's going. I'm not taking any of the risks in like the first 10 picks. Otherwise, like he is that risk pick you take in the early rounds. If you're taking a risk at all, like yeah, you don't compound risk basically here.
And I agree. It's like, you got to limit your risk, and he's a great risk. Cause again, he could be a 30-30 guy pretty easily. I say easily if he plays the games. Yeah. I'm with you. It's not the fact of learning the new position that bugs me as much as it's a position where guys are diving and running into things, and he's going to play at 110%. That's just his style. And that's what scares me about Jazz. It's not that he couldn't play the position. It's going to, you know, it might affect him for a month of the year, but I don't think it's going to be a long-term thing. It's more of staying healthy and not, you know, doing dumb things in the outfield, especially on that turf in Miami and everything. So that is my concern with Jazz. We'll see. Great ADP could be a league-winning play if he stays healthy. So definitely worth the risk.
Let's real quick. I know we again, I was talking about the Marlins suck, but I'm over here like, let's talk about Jazz a little more. Oh, yeah. It's one of those things where everyone knows this about Jazz, but let's just make sure people understand the left hand, the splits are just terrible for him. You know, Jazz can't hit lefties, or at least hasn't to this point in his career. To say a 25-year-old can't hit against a certain side, it's just not in a larger sample and all that. But 661 career OPS, 238 career WOBA, and a career 78 WRC plus against lefties for Jazz. And the other thing is I'm not sure he leads off, which is actually a benefit for him. Yeah. If the numbers from runners in scoring position actually are an indication. If you look at his splits with men in scoring position, yep, it's like a 951 OPS, a 395 WOBA, 154 WRC plus, a 296 yep ISO. So Jazz crushes with players on ahead of him, which yep I would like to think that they see this too. You know, the Marlins,
you'd hope so.
You can argue that the Marlins aren't the best in terms of some things, but the number, if us regular people are seeing this, you got to think that maybe Jazz bats second or third with the idea of there's going to be players ahead of him now that can definitely set the table for him.
Yeah, I saw those Jazz like on base guys and like players on base hitting stats and everything recently, and I was just like blown away. And because at first I saw Roster Resource like a couple weeks ago, he's hitting third or fourth. I'm like, what are they doing? And then I saw those stats and I'm like, huh, that makes sense. You got a Rise, you got a Segura in front of them that can get on base. That's interesting. That's really interesting. So I'm intrigued. I'm not completely out on Jazz. It's just I'm very cautious with Jazz and drafts right now. We'll see how that goes.
I just won't have Jazz on every team as yes much as I want them. It's one of those things like I'm already exposed, and I will probably have another couple shares on teams that matter, but he's not going to be a guy that it's like, oh, I don't know. I don't want him on 50% of my rosters, even maybe 40 on the high end, like a 40% roster guy, which 4 out of 10 leagues, if I play 10 leagues, that's still a lot of Jazz exposure, but I'm willing to, that's kind of my max limit with him right now is what I'm thinking.
Makes a ton of sense. Gene Segura, new Marlin, free agent contract over there. I have always loved Gene Segura, hits for good average. You know, he's got 10-10, maybe 15-15 appeal, depending on the season. He could score some runs. Good veteran, if you want to go that direction. He's going to get to play pretty much every day for Miami, love it or hate it, to Curlin. So what's your thoughts when it comes to fantasy? Because with a guy like Gene Segura, we're talking an ADP of 226 for second base eligibility.
And he should gain third base. My understanding yep is that he's yep supposed to start at third base. However, I don't understand. I'm just surprised he hasn't played third base since 2020. And the defensive metrics weren't bad, but this was also 2 years ago before he's now, on what, 32, 33 years old almost? One of the yep two? 32. It doesn't matter.
He's 33 this year.
I would say he's turning 33. Okay, yeah. So it's one of those things where slowing down, getting older, playing farther away, playing third base versus second, that could be a little bit of a difference. We'll see, but the metrics were above average. Like they, you know, that's something at least worth mentioning that he has played third base. Just it's been a couple of years. And I'm just curious how the OBP plays. If the OBP doesn't play up, do we see him stick in that two spot? I don't know, because, but at the end of the day, there also might not be other options.
Yeah, we'll who else is taking that spot basically?
Well, do they bump players up? Do they do the yeah whole, hey, let's move Jazz second, let's move yeah Cooper third, Soler fourth.
Give Brian De La Cruz some love maybe.
Exactly. And it's just one of those things where if you look at the OBP for Segura 2 years before last, we saw 347 or better. But the one year we saw that good was he had a double digit walk rate. The other year we saw Segura have a 240, a mid 240, sorry, mid 340s OBP, was he had a 290 batting average. Last year he had neither, and Segura was closer to his career norm, like 336 OBP, I think was what he posted. He's a career 330 OBP guy. Not exactly ideal for a top, for a number two bat behind Arias, and I'm assuming Arias leads off at this point. Yeah, that's where it's like, that's the only thing you have to worry about is like if he loses some of those two spot plate appearances. But again, I feel like he's going to have a long leash there. So it's one of those, that's a very small concern, just something I dug up while I was looking at him. Because with him, you mentioned, you kind of know what you're getting. He's going to hit 260 to 270 on the low end, it feels like Segura is, while probably hitting double digit home runs. I'd say at least 10. He was hitting 10 home runs even back in Seattle. And I don't think Miami's going to be that much worse for him. Mm-hmm. So 10 to 12 home runs, and then probably we don't know how the manager is going to run this year. Is he going to be are the Marlins going to be as aggressive? Because the Marlins are as aggressive as last year. We can see 15, 20 stolen bases, but if not, is 15 the ceiling now? 12? I wouldn't obviously bank much more than the 10 to 12 you mentioned, but Segura has that type of upside for more. So we'll see how the Marlins are aggressive wise. It's one of those things where we don't know what to expect from the Marlins with the new coaching staff as of yet on the base paths.
Sure. I just like the upside at the ADP, second base, gaining the third base. That just leaves a lot of flexibility for your team. For a guy that's not going to really crush you in any one department, maybe RBIs, I guess. But you can work around it at that point. The draft, like, is a middle infield / corner infield emergency type option, even third base, as bad as it is. I'm intrigued.
Me on here to be critical. I'm being critical here.
Oh, I know. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just giving my viewpoints where
I like them. All that sounded like I hated them. It's probably gonna come off as I hate everybody on the Marlins just because I can see all the negatives here, and I'm just.
Yeah, I guess that's why I just go past it, because I know how you think, and I just like I know I'm where bred. You're at.
Yeah, I'm just bred in negativity at this point, you know. Like,
well, let's talk one that I'm negative on is Luis Arraez. Real life baseball, sure, good ball player, good batting average, gets on base, scores some runs. Fantasy wise. To me, it's never worth the draft pick to me. You talk about, like, he maybe puts the runs to go with it. Otherwise, he's just empty batting average, which, sure. But ADP 201, no thank you. He's first base, second base, which is kind of nice. Like, you get that option. But yeah. I'll pass. I just go away from this one. Maybe you can tell me otherwise. We've been opposite on Segura. Let's be opposite on Arraez. Tell me I'm wrong. What's your thoughts on Luis Arraez?
No. I'm the same way. I'm the same way. I don't get, like I said, real life, this makes a lot more sense. Batting title. He actually has, not that he's like terrible against lefties, but I think he hit like 260 something against him last year compared to being really strong against righties, hitting over 300, like 333. I don't think he's at a platoon risk because, again, who's there to platoon with him unless they want to platoon Garrett Cooper at first base with Arias, and then. But who else can play second? I mean, they did go out of their way to get like 15 second basemen this offseason, and they still don't have enough depth except for Birdie to kind of take away plate appearances. So that would be the only thing I think of is maybe they want to squeeze Birdie in if Cooper struggles against righties. But Cooper doesn't exactly have bad splits. So I don't know, I was throwing out ideas in my head on how they could somehow screw this up. So again, but Arias, he is what he is. I feel like it's the same way. He loses any, like, even that little bit of power he might have had, like, close, like, 8 home runs last year, or 4, one of the two. He had 4 or 8 stolen bases, one of the, I flipped off those numbers. But he pretty much lost any power he had potential to once he went to Miami. And again, the only thing he could have is maybe he adds some stolen bases, but there's no guarantee that the Marlins run as much again this year. That's all.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I don't understand the 201 ADP, but we'll see. No. Let's go to Garrett Cooper, first baseman / outfield option, actually. He is first base only now in NFBC. Yeah. ADP of 441, though, I've always been a Cooper fan for the price-wise. It's always a question of can he stay healthy. He played 119 games, most of his career last year. I think there's a lot to like there if he can stay healthy, but it's just a big if with Coop. I know you're not the biggest Cooper guy, so what's your thoughts on Garrett Cooper?
I was, and I think I got burned by him, and it's like always getting burned by him, and there's always that, like, oh, there's potential. But is there at this point? Like,
I've been told that, like, for nearly 40 years. I got it. I understand.
That's what I'm getting at. So Garrett Cooper's a guy that, considering the price, though, especially now, I get it. He's a depth play in a deep league, and that's fine. And he's okay there. It's frustrating because I feel like there's always potential for more. But are they going to limit him again? Are they going to limit him because of health issues? You mentioned the career high 119 games, but he also has a 111 WRC plus or better since 2019, every year since. So even though he's limited, he produces at above average yep. level. Yeah. So maybe they want to make a point to rest him frequently, 5 games a week, kind of give him the Jesus Aguilar treatment of last year, where Aguilar was kind of playing 4 to 5 days a week, keeping him healthy. And then we get maybe some more Forte or whatever in the process, getting some first base in there.
No, that makes a lot of sense, actually. I used to love him. I still like him in DCs right now, but I loved him when he had first base outfield, just because he gave you the depth that if he was playing like 4 games a week, you could get him in the right times or whatever. And like you said, he was still productive when he played. It's just, can he play? And I think the power is better than 9 home runs. You still saw good barrel rates and hard hit rates and everything. So I think there is like a 15 home run guy there, and the projections got him for like 16 or so. At 441 deep formats, sure, but it's not as enticing as it was probably for any of us a couple of years ago. I agree with you there, but I think at the price, I think there's still something we have not seen yet from Garrett Cooper.
Yeah, it's all a matter of him staying healthy, and the problem is we just can't even say those words really out loud. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. if he stays healthy, it's one of those things where that if is like, it's almost like a pipe dream now, because I just have a heart. It's just never happened, and at what point do we stop expecting it to possibly happen?
I agree.
And for him, 119 could have just been if healthy. That could have been his if healthy year.
Could have been. Very well could have been. So we'll see. I think a guy that we can kind of agree we're ready for a bounce back this year is Avisel Garcia. Hitting in the middle of the order also. You know, ADP of 324. Only played 98 games last year after 135. Where he got 29 jacks in 2021. It was his first year in Miami. Average was down. But, you know, you look at the quality of contact metrics and barrel rate was down, but like the max EVs, the hard hit rates, those were looking good still. So I think there's something to be optimistic about with Avisel, unless you're seeing something different. So what's your thoughts on him?
I don't know what to think about him. I do recall him mentioning being out of shape last year and making a point to come into this year being in better shape. So that could play a part. Obviously, if a player's out of shape, shows up to camp, not taking it as serious as he should. Unfortunately, this is also the second, like last year, 2022 for Avisel Garcia was the second straight season that we saw both the swing strike rate creep up as well as the chase rate. So having both those things creep up simultaneously two straight seasons is a bit concerning, but he still was able to keep decent Z contact. That was actually better than it's been the last couple of years too. So maybe there's some stuff there going on in a good way, but he has this weird odd year. You ever see his splits or ever look at his numbers? It's like odd year Avi, basically.
Yep.
Going back to 2017, 138 WRC plus, 92, 113, 83, 116, 66. He's due for like a 115, 112. Like there's no science there, but it's like the odd year Avi, he's due for that. And especially you regress that K rate back to something that's more normal for him. If he comes in in better shape than he met, like he mentioned, I think we do get a little bit of a bounce back. And I think it's just funny, because it's like, I want to be like, hey, this, it's odd year Avi, we're going to get it. You know, like I want to keep it simple like that sometimes.
Hey, I have no problem with simple. Trust me. I'm a caveman when it comes to this stuff. So bring it on. Another guy, it's like, this is why the Marlins are enticing. Yeah. Like, because there's so many like what ifs on this team, like what ifs, and Jorge Soler fits that mold perfectly. ADP of 283. We know the power is legit. He wasn't healthy all last year. Still walked a ton. Strike rate went up. Not ideal, but I mentioned with Avi, you know, quality of contact still crushing the baseball, which is what you want to see from Jorge Soler. So it's a big if he stays healthy. Are we back to a 20 plus home run dude, and we get a heck of a value here, or what's your thoughts?
If you actually look at, like, if you know, we go just looking at the half a year he pretty much gave us last year, Soler did, and he was pacing out power wise to be similar to the year before, like mid to upper 20s. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like it's not like it's out of the question. At least I believe that's what I was looking at before. I have my notes here, but I didn't write that down. I thought I did. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The issue was we saw a big spike in the strikeout rate last year, and I feel like the strikeouts are going to continue to be an issue. And I don't know if the batting average is going to be. I feel like I got my hopes up expecting a little bit of what we saw in the second half with the Braves into the playoffs in 2021 from Soler. I was hoping for some of that to kind of, you know, spill over into Miami. It didn't. So it's one of those like that obviously might have been the exception to the rule. That growth might have been something that was a little, that's probably what he got paid off of, basically, based on that little bit of run in that World Series MVP that he won if memory serves, he won the MVP there, that year, right? And for that,
yes, I believe so. Yes, World Series won.
So it made me so, and but we saw some like legitimate change, a huge second half with the Braves. I remember that. I was like so excited that the Marlins signed Soler. So I feel like we still have a potential for that type of production on the high end, but I feel like the low end is what we saw the first half of that year and what we saw even last year while healthy. So Soler is just a guy that if you're okay absorbing the bad batting average, you know the power upside is as good as anyone's. He has that type of power. There's no not denying it. It's just a matter of can he get back to being closer to the guy we saw in Atlanta and farther away from the guy we saw in Kansas City and part of last year.
Yep. And that's the tricky part, but it's one of those like out of when you start going past ADP 200, if you look at potential like 25 plus home run guys, he definitely fits that mold that
he's one of the few.
Yeah, so that makes it much more enticing at that point in the draft. Now, one I can't wrap my head around at all, ADP wise, Joey Wendell at 381 makes sense. Second base, third base, shortstop eligible, which is great. He's slotted in to be the starting shortstop, though. That's the part I get confused about in Miami. But tell me, is Joey Wendell fantasy viable at that ADP and those positional eligibilities?
That's the only thing that saves him is the eligibilities. I don't see – there's no skill set here that is intriguing to me. At one point, I think he looked like the type of guy that had like 20 stolen base upside a couple years back, if memory serves. I remember
– 16 steals in 2018.
That's what it was. Yeah, I remember everyone was like – because I remember being in on them for that idea of like, oh, look, he can steal those bases. But if he's not – I don't know if he's going to be able to steal those bases. I don't know if he can stay healthy at this point. Like, I'm not sure if I could buy into that. I'm trying to look at his – actually, I meant to look this up. His defensive metrics at shortstop, if they even exist. Like, yeah, he wasn't bad, actually, as a shortstop last year. So that explains why he's getting the start – starting at shortstop, I should say. So, and Mish is the one who actually said he'll be starting at shortstop, so you believe that for sure. All things considered, though, fantasy-wise, stolen base potential, he had 12 last year in just 371 plate appearances. You're only taking him for that in the positional flexibility because – he's the closest thing to a rabbit on this team probably besides Birdie, but Birdie doesn't have a starting role, but I'm trying to find something here, and it's the positional flexibility just for in case of injuries and if you're chasing steals in a desperate situation.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that the flexibility at 381 in a DC comes in handy that late just to give you that roster depth, but you don't expect a ton when all things are said and done. Mm-hmm. Brian De La Cruz in the outfield had a big finish to the season, like average wise, contact wise, was very, very good. ADP of 231 right now, 13 homers, 4 steals last year at 252. Like I said, the second half, or at least the last month or two, was very, very strong. Are we buying into that finish of the season, or are we buying into the total package of Brian De La Cruz?
I want to believe, but I don't know, man. It's hard to buy it. It was a 94 plate appearance, September, October. It was 94 plate appearance, October, September, whatever you want to call it. And he had 6 home runs, hit 388, 419, 718. This is Brian De La Cruz I'm talking about, with a 329 ISO, 215 WRC plus, a 17.7% barrel rate and a 52.9% hard hit rate.
Those are like MVP type numbers.
Yeah. He had the lowest ground ball and the highest pull percentage of the year during the span too. So there was an obvious approach change. And I believe he went down to the minors, fixed some stuff or made some adjustments, came back up. I think it was him and Jesus Sanchez that both did that or actually made a point to go fix, try to adjust things and come back up. But then the Dominican Winter League happened, and I'm pretty sure De La Cruz, if memory serves there, was rough around the edges. And that concerns me because if he can't find success there coming off that hot finish, why is he going to suddenly, why would that carry over to when the games matter against like better, you know, competition? True. And that's where I get a little concerned, and I'm not sure if I'm buying in. Plus, if you look at the Marlins lineup, they are struggling for some left-handed power in that bottom half of that lineup, even towards the middle. And Jesus Sanchez, they might not be ready to give up on him yet. And now that they don't need De La Cruz to necessarily play center because they're going to have Jazz playing center, I don't know if De La Cruz – I think it's going to be a legit – I mean, unless we see something that states otherwise, I don't see why they wouldn't let them battle it out in spring.
Well, let's talk Sanchez real quick then, because like I said, De La Cruz has an ADP of basically 231. And we got – God damn it. When you think Jesus Sanchez, it's 446. Like, Are you taking the 446 on Sanchez as a gamble, or are you sticking with De La Cruz much earlier?
I haven't found myself getting De La Cruz. As much as I'm intrigued, I'm not exactly out on him. It's just one of those things where I feel like either A, I address outfield differently, or I think, because it's like one of those things where it was De La Cruz and like Lars Nootbaar at one point going right by each other. And I was like, I got Lars 10 times out of 10, so I never got De La Cruz. And then it's like, I think I, at this point, I'm building outfield out to where I don't need, I don't end up with De La Cruz because I have guys I have ranked ahead of them, like three or four of them already by the time I get to them. So I think if part, that's part of why I'm all, but I think it's also, you almost, I don't know, I feel like you're paying a lot. I think it's a high price to pay for somebody who had one strong month at the end of the year when you're facing the weakest competition in pitching as well. You have guys coming up just getting by. We have the worst catchers, you know, catchers that are just getting by, that might not know how to call a game properly. These weird things that people don't necessarily factor in, and you can't really put that in the numbers anyway unless you go game by game, look at who the catcher and pitcher combos were. And even then, how you quantify a badly called game from a catcher, right?
Makes a lot of sense, yeah.
So it's one of those things where the more I dive in, the more it's like I just find myself not. I guess I can't say I'm out. I can't say I'm in on a guy if I don't have any shares on like six teams already. So yeah. I guess I am out. I just don't want to say I'm out because I would take him at the right price, is what it is. I guess that price hasn't been the price for me.
Let's talk John Birdie then. It's talking about the price of John Birdie, 41 steals last year, that monstrous run. Then he got hurt, disappeared. 102 games was the most of his career by over 17 games in 2021. He's second base, third base eligible. Like you mentioned earlier, doesn't have a set starting job. ADP is 282. So people are still paying the price for him for the chance he does get the steals at some point in time. How are you approaching John Birdie draft season wise?
I honestly wasn't too interested. I actually became more interested the more I dove in for this podcast, only because I see plenty of paths to playing time via injury or days. Like I could see him playing 3 days a week already, just looking at the way they might want to give everyone in the infield a day off. Like he could play second, he could play short, he could play third. Segura's no spring chicken, Wendell's no spring chicken, and Arias, if he gets stuck platooning, Birdie could just be a platoon partner there. I'm just saying Arias platooning because that's what we saw last year. Obviously, new team could be a new approach. I don't see Arias platooning, but we're just saying worst best case scenario for Birdie here. So Birdie, I'm seeing a path to playing time just in general via utility, probably two games a week. But then the second there's an injury, he's a full-time guy again. So if you're looking, if you want to bank on the steals, that's all it is if you want to kind of stash a guy on your bench that you know that can come up and be, if he starts for like 3 weeks, can give you like seven steals or so in like 2 to 3 weeks. That's literally what you're drafting him for. So if you want that type of upside, I get it. I've been avoiding it since. I'm trying to build out teams where I don't need those types of players, but at least I'm trying to provide optimism for those that might think, because what we got last year is not going to happen again this year. Let's just make that very clear about Birdie. Birdie's not going to do what he did last year. It's going to take a lot, I think. But I do think that he will have useful runs. And if you are stolen base needy, taking him and just sitting on him in draft champions formats isn't the worst idea, because you just know that there's going to be an injury and he should be that first man up, especially in the infield.
Yeah, there'll be a stretch where he becomes very, very viable like last year. So we'll see what happens. Last question offensively I have, unless you have other players to discuss. Catching, we know Stallings is there because of his defense. We know Fortes is the better offensive talent. I think most of us in fantasy are banking on Fortes at some point in time getting a lion's share, a larger share of the role, but who knows? How are you approaching these two come draft season? Because Fortes' ADP right now is 323.
I was a Fortes guy. And then I started realizing. I was, and I still am not opposed to the price because two catcher leagues, he offers that upside at the catcher position, and you can pair him. He's going late enough where you can pair him with somebody that, oh, I don't know, his own freaking partner, Jacob Stallings, if you really wanted to. My point is, though, you could pair him. He's going late enough to where if you take him and he doesn't hit on that upside, you could still fall. There's a fallback option there, like a Luis Campusano or something that, like, I think is going to end up breaking camp at this point with the way the team has addressed catcher or hasn't really addressed catcher over there in San Diego. But what I'm getting at is that Fortes is a guy that just he has that upside. It's just one of those things where the playing time isn't so set and so clear. And that's why it's like I'm okay with him not catching, but. They started now the Marlins actually started making more moves, and they already are kind of clogged at DH with Soler. True. and then Schumacher and company up there, the front office has actually made comments about how Soler is gonna be like the primary DH, with the DH getting spread around to keep others healthy throughout the year. But if they're already making comments about Soler being the primary DH, that kind of made me fall back a little on Fortes a little bit. And now you're hoping for some first base run. But then if he gets that first base run, that's gonna come at the expense of Cooper. So it's like pick your poison here, you know. What are you rooting for? So Fortes, it's one of those, like, he's the odd man out and he's getting squeezed. Cause I think Stallings' defense, at least that's what they went out and got him for last year. His defense, his framing and all that. I feel like if that's strong to start the year, that's gonna be one of those things that keeps him heavily involved and probably keeps them in a stronger side of that playing time.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one as well.
It sucks.
Let's go to the mound now, where this is where the Marlins kind of have some more of the fantasy relevance, it feels like, at times. And we start with Sandy Alcantara, the NL Cy Young Award winner. He's the eighth pitcher off the board, like the sixth starting pitcher at ADP of 30-ish. 228 innings last year, or almost 229 innings. Ratios were great. Second straight year over 205, third straight over 197. So he's an innings eater. He's an accumulator, though, is what I always say. Like, if he doesn't get the innings and he's not getting the strikeouts you want either, and wins are always going to be tough regardless. So I've just kind of been stubborn and been out on Sandy. I understand those that are in on Sandy. I get both sides of the spectrum. How are you viewing Sandy at this price point and the talent level?
I listened to your pod with Toby, and you know I did, because I sent you your misspoke. It was when you said the wrong Severino. It was really funny to me. But anyway, I digress. So I listened to it and I was like in lockstep with you guys. It sucks because I think Sandy, the talent is evident. I think he's great. I just also think for fantasy purposes, there's no room for growth where you're drafting him, and we're not getting 220 innings again. Like, he'll probably get close to 200, if not 200 again. That's something I feel comfortable saying. And I feel like I understand people who pay for that, because you're paying for that stability in a day and age where we're hoping for 150 from these absolute ace guys at this point, you know? So I get that. It makes sense. It's one of those things where if one little thing goes wrong, he's not coming close to that draft price. And Sandy's a guy that needs everything to go right to hit, to even make that price make sense. And it hurts to say that. I feel like he's like, maybe what it is also is you're paying for a sense of security, because I would argue that Sandy probably has the highest floor in fantasy among pitchers.
That's fair.
I'd say you're getting that. So maybe you're getting SP 15, but you're paying that SP top five price. That's not a huge loss. It's just obviously, but it's still a big enough loss to be like, well, why are you taking him as the top five SP then? Yeah. When you know that there's a good chance he turns it back into that closer to a top 15-ish guy, just because the strikeouts might not be there. Because he always shows glimpse of potential for strikeouts at times, like in spurts, like this half here or this half there. Sandy's never put it together for a full season to where the strikeouts have ever become a true positive or a true plus. And so that's why he's, like you mentioned, the volume is what's made Sandy so valuable to fantasy managers. And I do think that he's still going to have that volume, but all it takes is one IL stint to throw that volume out the window. Now you have a less valuable Dodgers. Louis, what's his name? Wow.
Urias.
So if one IL stint, one blister, not even a freak, like a fluke injury like that, one blister, he's close to a Urias without the wins.
Yep.
Because that's all. Urias is the same type of pitcher, but gets 20 wins a season or somehow. Like, well, not somehow. It's the Dodgers, but it's the Dodgers. You get my point. So yeah, like all it takes is one fluke blister, one something stupid, one slips on a dugout mat, like things that we've seen people actually do. It takes one thing like that, and now he's not as valuable. So that's why it's like, because you're playing with something that's such a small, like, potential for just, it takes so little for him to not hit that draft cost is why I'm out. And it's frustrating because he's really good. It's not like I'm with you. I feel bad. I feel guilty for fading him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I feel dirty for it. And like, that's why I preface him. Like, if anybody likes him, this is not a slight on you. It's just it's like the way I view it with he has to pitch the innings. And if he doesn't, he's a very good pitcher, but he's not a 30th overall draft pick. Like that's the kicker when it comes to the Sandy Man. So it's an interesting discussion, and it's starting to sound like there's more people that agree with us slowly that are coming out and admitting it than there were before. Let's go to Jesus Luzardo now. This is a fun one. We've all known the talent is awesome with Jesus Luzardo. That's never been in question. It's the health. And last year we got 100 innings out of him. He kind of came back late in the season, and he was pretty darn good. ADP of like 145 right now. We had the strikeouts last year. The ratios are good in the time that he pitched. It's a question of how many innings does he go this year is the biggest question for me. So how do you look at Jesus Luzardo? Maybe you've heard something from Mish or somebody else down there.
I actually was looking for stuff on all these guys, except for Johnny Cueto, which we'll talk about soon. But I was looking up articles on all these guys just to check in on their health, to see if I could find anything that suggests maybe they went to like work at Driveline or, you know, just stuff that we might be missing on Twitter. I found nothing. It's probably because it's still only early February. But usually by now we get those Driveline notices. That's why I was like, maybe I'll find something, but no, nothing. Luzardo, 8 of his final 9 starts, he went 6+ innings. So it's like, so he was being efficient, which is great. I want to see the velo this spring, just because when he returned, it was a little down, and then it did trend up towards the end of the year, but it never quite returned to where it started at last year. So the velo, not necessarily an issue, just something I want to see with Jesus. Something I want to see with Jesus Luzardo. I'm trying to say the name, and I apologize. Also the I want to see how his pitch mix goes, because again, it was just such a small sample. When he returned, he did something and then kind of changed his pitch mix the final month as well, and he found success both ways. So was it just a matter of matchups? Was it a matter of not getting maybe got more comfortable with the four seamer because he was throwing the four seamer more, dipped back on the changeup, even though the changeup's a really strong pitch for him? And it was one of those things. I just want to see how he starts the year off and his choice of pitch mix. So more so just curious to see how it goes, but all that to say that like I'm really in on him. I really like what we saw and how he came back healthy and finished the year strong, especially with those, again, 8 and 9 starts going 6+. I think that's a really, really good indication of health. So Lazardo's not a guy I'm really worried about health-wise, but him, Cabrera, who's on the list, I'll just real quick about Cabrera, was the innings as well. I don't know what to expect with the innings limits for these guys. So this could open up just more time for other guys on the fringe here, you know,
which is good, because there's a bunch of fringe options, which we'll talk about. So it kind of helps with that. And like they're more fringe guys now because Johnny Cueto is on the Marlins. And this was like one of those, I guess, like from a real, this is again, a real life baseball kind of made sense. He was cheap. He's going to be in it. He's a veteran presence. Like there's anything you want to point to makes sense. Fantasy wise, we like to joke around about how, like, you know, there's helium and there's this and that. But when it comes to Johnny Cueto, still an ADP in the 470s. So people have not bitten into that. You know, all the innings last year, ratios were better than they've been in a long time. Didn't strike anybody out. I don't see a lot of that change in Kirwin. Do you see anything worth gravitating to Johnny Cueto for?
Outside of DCs or NL only, that's it. Like Cueto, he's fun to watch because he does like all those weird movements and stuff, but
yeah, he'll be great for the clubhouse. He'll be phenomenal for the clubhouse. Yeah, hopefully he brings his horses. It'll be a great time.
Stallions. Remember that thing? That was the whole thing with Miami.
Oh, we've got a bunch of that stuff. Oh yeah. Edward Cabrera, you mentioned him briefly. He's got an ADP of 226. So you mentioned the innings concerns with him. Was there anything else you wanted to touch on with Mr. Edward Cabrera, who only threw, well, between AAA and the bigs last year, threw close to 100 innings?
It was 110, I think I counted. Regardless, there are some walk concerns, but everyone speaks so highly of him and his potential to get better. And if there's a team that you believe in when it comes to developing pitching, it is the Marlins. So Edward Cabrera having the arsenal he had 3 pitches last year with like a 32% O swing or better, with the changeup having a 42.7% O swing. So he gets chases on his pitches. It's just a matter of, can he also induce swinging strikes? Cause I noticed those rates were kind of on the lower end, especially expecting how much like strikeout stuff he has. I know the stuff's there. He also faced more lefties than righties, which is really weird for any pitcher, I feel like, but he faced more lefties than righties, at least innings pitch versus lefties, right? From what I was looking at on the splits, I was like, huh, that was really intriguing at the major league level. But it's good because he has him and Luzardo both have, I think Luzardo has 4 pitches and Edward Cabrera has 5, and they both have 2 that they are able to attack lefties with. So that gives them the fact that they can both attack both sides of the plate with different pitch mixes and stuff. But Cabrera, I just found it really intriguing the way he has so much potential. And I really like betting on the potential in this rotation with this development team. Because you mentioned the Marlins are good at one thing, and that's developing pitching, because they can't develop a hitter for their lives. That's why they trade for him, and that's why they, I would say sign, but they don't make good signings. They sign terrible hitters, apparently. But yes, Edward Cabrera is a very, very solid upside play. If you've built out a really strong staff for fantasy, Cabrera is that wild card that you take. Maybe you're like SP5 that has like huge upside, but just know that they're. I mean, he dealt with was it one or two bicep injuries last year? It was, and then he had two. I think it was two. I think it was like he was recovering from one and then it flared back up or something.
Yeah.
So it was one of those things where, you know, just like the nature of the position is more, you know, more likely for injury. So that's the thing you have to worry about with him, though. And again, the innings and so there's innings issues because of injuries. And then walks issue. So there's a little bit of, but it makes sense. It's all built into the price. I just don't think there's many players there with that type of upside where he's going. So the price tag is really, really intriguing.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's so much talent there. Just keep it on the field, like you're saying. We could have a lot of fun. The battle for the fifth starting pitcher job, Trevor Rogers, ADP 258, Braxton Garrett, 365. I'm a team Braxton Garrett guy, and that's why I was really angry when Cueto got signed. I think there's still something there with Rogers too. We saw how nasty last year was when he came back from his injury a little better. He's still so young. I think there's hope for both these guys, but it'll be an interesting battle. So how do you look at Trevor Rogers and Braxton Garrett?
I look at it from a fantasy perspective that Rogers has the upside where Garrett has the floor, especially because we saw how Rogers the splits weren't as good as they probably should have been for Rogers. Rogers just, I feel like that it was the fastball got just hit hard in the second half. But when you saw Rogers under the hood in the second half, we had a 3.72 FIP, a 2.75 XFIP, and a 3.03 Sierra with a 22.7% K minus walk rate. The bad was the 20% home run to fly ball rate and a below average strand rate and a 356 BABIP. So he had bad luck on top of bad home run, on top of giving up too many home runs in the second half. But Rogers was starting to figure it out, increase the four-seamer usage, decrease the slider usage, and increase the changeup usage. So there was a change of pitch mix. He was starting to get a feel for things, and it just wasn't completely materializing. But we saw it coming. We saw it improving, especially under the hood, which is what we like to bank on, not the actual, you know, ERA. So Rogers, I feel like plus we've seen Rogers actually succeed at the big league level. Not to say that Braxton Garrett didn't. He's just Braxton Garrett. like what he showed us was just solid. Like, okay, you're good for a two start week. Maybe a one start week against the Nationals type of guy, which has uses in deeper formats for sure. And it goes back to these guys not being able to stay healthy. He'll probably get 100 plus innings in this rotation anyway. So draft them both. I feel like if he doesn't just straight up beat out Rogers, both these guys are going to find their way into this rotation, given the likelihood of some of these other guys missing time or needing a Phantom IL stint, you know?
Yep. And that's going to, they'll get their time, like you said. So I'm still kind of buying into both, especially Garrett at his price, but I don't dislike the Rogers thing. I like the comps of floor ceiling between the two as being quite interesting. Now we look at the bullpen. This is where it gets fun. Like Flora seemed like he was the guy for a long time. We saw Tanner Scott get his at times. He's done it throughout his career, wherever he's been, he sneaks in a few here and there. Then they go and trade for Matt Barnes, who's kind of feels like a right-handed version of Tanner Scott. So that's annoying. I always thought like Flora's gig, cause he was the best option. Plus they want to trade him. So I'm curious, how do you look at the back end of the Marlins bullpen, just assuming they get wins to even qualify?
Hey now. Hey, Barnes put up a 1.59 ERA last year in the second half, okay? So yeah, there's something action there. Yeah. But in all reality, I'm not expecting much. I mean, still, we're talking about a couple guys that are just I think Floro probably earned at least the start with the role, because you know he finished with it. I feel like he'll just get a chance to run with it to start. I do think this kind of takes Tanner Scott out of it, unless it's a heavy lefty. And these days, you know, teams don't really have three lefties in a row, but maybe he can get two out of three lefties if he gets, because he is that lefty guy. So maybe he can get matchup based, but I think it's Floro's job to lose with Barnes. I think Barnes will get some, and especially if Barnes comes out picking up where he left off to finish last year, we could see Barnes claim it as well. But Floro didn't do anything to lose it, I think, is the important thing here. Yeah. And that's why I still lean with Floro being the guy entering the year, unless we hear otherwise, because that's always possible too.
I'm with you on that one. Any other hitters or pitchers we did not discuss besides the prospects we'll discuss shortly that are worth fantasy interest to you?
You mentioned Jesus Sanchez. I did pull up De La Cruz's Dominican Winter League, and he had like a 632 OPS in the Dominican Winter League this offseason.
Not ideal.
Let's put it that way. Only 33 at bats or play appearances, excuse me. Or sorry, 33 games. No, No, 33 games, not at bats. I lied. 136 PA. So it's still a small sample, but a
larger, small but decent.
Still. A larger small sample. Yeah. But still, my point is though, is it's like that's we're talking about what type of players did he face there? You know what I mean? Like that's where it gets kind of interesting. Like he wasn't facing MLB talent there. So why couldn't he carry over that small time success? Was he just not maybe out of his element, not with his certain coaches? And that's why you can't judge that Winter League performance. But it was something that's like, well, why couldn't he at least follow it up with a mediocre outing, but sub 700 OPS?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Anyway, that was if nothing else, that was worth circling back and discussing and mentioning.
Any prospects that could have a potential fantasy impact this year? Or are we just kind of stuck with what we got when it comes to, like, is JJ Bleday finally going to happen? Or what do we got when it comes to prospects for the Marlins?
I just don't trust the Marlins when it comes to developing hitters. So if they couldn't make, Bleday is probably going to be one of the first guys. Peyton Burdick, we'll see him again. Gerard Encarnacion. The problem is like the one position that the Marlins are like, until they make trades, they are so like outfield is such a crunch because that's like the only position that they seem to have any type of depth at. But in terms of middle infield, two guys I wanted to mention just because they're new to the team and they actually have probably the easiest path to playing time given that, again, an injury to Wendell, and if they don't believe in Birdie, it'd be Xavier Edwards, who they went out and grabbed from the Rays, who's a speed first guy. So I wouldn't expect any power there, but a guy who stole last year, just 7 stolen bases, but years before that, 19, 14, 20, like the guy's stolen bases at multiple levels, decent plate discipline, sub 20% K rate at every stop, double digit walk rates the last two stops. So on base ability is there and there's stolen base potential. That's Xavier Edwards. Just unfortunately, just a slap. Wait, he was the slapdick prospect, right? That's who it was.
I think so. Yes. Now that you mention it, I think he was the one that came from San Diego in that deal. Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because he was San Diego, Tampa, and now,
yes. he would be the slapdick, and it's fitting now that he's a Marlin.
And then Jacob Amaya was the other one. Came over from LA, 17-6 last year with really strong plate discipline. Spiked the K rays a little bit in the upper minors, but not like an alarming rate. Just because there's a little bit of power speed there. That caught my attention when I was looking into there, like, and he's on the 40 man. That's so it's big. Like, okay, well, and that's what caught my attention. I was like, again, going back to the 40 man, when I look at prospects for fantasy, small tangent, I guess, I like to see that they're on the 40 man. Now that can change at any given moment because there was four huge names like Jordan Walker, Matt Mervis, Anthony Volpe, and Oscar Colas. Those four are not on their team's respective 40 mans right now. So as we enter spring training, the teams actually have to make room for them if they want to bring them on to start the year. That suggests to me that they have no plans on bringing them on to start the year. Doesn't mean they won't be early call-ups. It's just one of those things where it's like people hope these players are going to break camp. If they're not on the 40 man, which again can change any given moment. So it's not the end all be all, but it is something I try to look at when it comes to like these random, maybe potential like lower end or no name prospects that could be something in the second half or at some point randomly. That's what I look for. Just are they on the 40 man and do they offer any type of skill set that intrigues me? And then I come across names like Jacob Amaya, which I'm not a prospect guy. So that name was like, okay, I know his, I think I'm guessing it. I wonder if he's related to the Cubs Amaya, the catcher.
Oh, that could be. Could be. And I liked how you put that out there with the Mervis and all those guys, because I think it really stood out to people, like, oh, wait a minute, maybe I should slow down on some of these guys real quick, just because that 40-man deal is kind of a big deal. Last name I have for you.
Oh, God.
ADP of around 556. What's the deal with big boy Sixto Sanchez?
Okay, can we get Eric Cross in here? Because that's his boy. All right, so Sixto. It's funny you mentioned it, because the last I saw on him, I didn't even bother looking him up for this podcast, because I
forgot all about it until I was scrolling through stuff on their roster resource page.
Oh, no, I saw his name. I just didn't care. I noticed them. It was one of those things where, because it was funny, I think it was like a month ago, we saw a video of him long tossing again. And I'm like, is this just are they just re-releasing footage? Is this like they're just like pulling a Tom Brady and just like this time last year they did the same thing, you know?
Yep.
And it's just, I saw him, so I'm like, okay, cool, he's long tossing again. We haven't seen him throw a ball in a meaningful way in like two full seasons. It feels like 2 years now. I don't have any expectations. If he can be back for the second half or at some point even in the first half, that'd be great. He would factor in to that, but maybe at this point he's better off in a multi-inning relief role.
I'm guessing that's what 2023 has in store for him. They got to stretch that thing back out. I think they got to take it slow. They've taken it this slow, why rush it now?
Yeah, it's, and even then, are we sure he's gonna even be close to what he was? And he showed flashes, but the injuries have been just constant. And we're going to get 50, 60 innings out of him anyway if he was a starter, maybe 70 in a good year.
Yeah, I guess I bring it up just because people are drafting him still. And I'm just like, I can't. I can't. I know the ADP is so low. I just can't. I don't see any upside to it at all.
I feel like that's part of the trap maybe. And we could talk, this is a little bit of a tangent as well, but something I've learned as a drafter is that, like, I used to draft players like this based on upside and name alone. Like, oh, this guy is a big name prospect. And oh, he's going this late. This is a value. But no, in these leagues that you're drafting them in, you need players that are going to actually play. And at that ADP, there are players still being drafted that will actually give you innings or give you more starts or give you something that you can actually use still. Whereas with him, it's all about taking a huge chance there. And some people don't see the harm in, if he doesn't play, oh, well, it's like, it's there's no such thing as a free square in these leagues. I used to think there was, you know, I used to think, oh, I'll take, like, oh, what's one spot? Well, in August when I have like, when I'm starting Kevin Biggio and his three games a week because I need plate appearances and everyone else is injured, I'm glad I took Kevin Biggio in the 600s. Like, bad example because I don't know if he'll actually be on the team, but you get my point, though. It's just one of those things where it's like, I don't like the waste. I try not to use picks on guys I think aren't going to play most of the year.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I'm with you. Lessons learned myself as well. You learn from these guys that win everything, and they talk about at bats and innings pitched. I don't care how good or bad they are. Like, I was looking where Sixto is, and these guys aren't great, but these guys are guys that are going to be pitching. Jordan Lyles goes after him. Trevor Williams goes out. Like, these aren't sexy by any means, but these are dudes that are going to start every fifth day.
Give me Matt Brash. Yeah, I know he's going right around there.
You got relievers. You got Brash. You got like Chris Martin out of Boston, Vesey out of LA. There's just a bunch of dudes you know are going to be putting in innings all season long. So it just changes the whole outlook on things. That's a mindset thing that you live and learn, or you just learn real quick and then live. It's up to you. But we learned the hard way, of course.
Yeah, because I did it multiple seasons. It wasn't once. I didn't learn the easy way either. I didn't learn one time I failed. No, I failed multiple times.
Yes, I fall, I get back up, I fall again, and I try to get back up. I try not to fall the third time, but we'll see. It probably happens.
I stumble.
I'm a klutz. It's okay. No balance over here. Big guy fall hard. Yeah. But we'll wrap it up there, my friend, Mr. Curlin. The Marlins, see, done. Painful, less painful, I don't know. But before we leave, plug all of your great stuff.
Okay, so if you want to just find me on Twitter at @Mike_Curlin, that's the main place to find me. I tweet all my work out there, but other than that, it's really the Patreon right now is patreon.com/GTE fantasy. And then the YouTube.com/GTE fantasy, where I pride myself in building up that GTE fantasy YouTube page. Cause I'm doing stuff that no other fantasy baseball YouTuber is doing. Cause there's like three of us. So bingo, other than the podcasts. And stuff
But you're talking different stuff. Yeah.
I'm actually putting out YouTube specific content. So if you're into video content or you're trying to find some video content for baseball and fantasy baseball, come check. It's GTE. It's on brand. You gotta come check it out.
Yep. Go check out Curlin. He's got his other written content elsewhere. Yeah. But GT is the main source, as you said.
There it
is. On Twitter at @Mike_Curlin, which is always great stuff. What is also great is chatting with you, my friend. Always a pleasure. Thanks for joining me tonight.
As always, man, it's always fun. Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. This was Bench with Bubba, your Miami Marlins 2023 season preview. Catch you guys next time.